You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's CJ Cup, second straight week in Las Vegas. We'll go tier by tier, breaking down the course, the players, and everything in between. And joining me is Sia Najat. Sia, what up?
What a watered-down field this CJ Cup is. They couldn't get some better players here? What's the deal?
Who are we missing? Rahm? Bryson?
Cantlay? Is that it?
Cantlay. Pretty good. Yeah, there is a question in the chat. I see this in the chat. Does anyone know why Bryson is not playing this week? He told us this a couple of weeks ago that he was taking off until Hero World Challenge, but I guess he will also play 12 holes against Brooks Koepka in the meantime. Greg Ducharme is here. Greg, welcome. I think, what, three more touchdowns from Derrick Henry this week? So you must be feeling pretty good.
Yeah, to take a turn to the NFL again, Derrick Henry did great. Jamar Chase was fantastic. Cooper Kupp's floor is as high as the ceiling in my house. It's the spoils of fantasy football roll on. So, yeah, happy about that. Hoping that this week's DFS is a little better than last week. We had some carnage. We had some missed cuts from guys I was very high on, which I knew could happen. I just didn't think it would. I thought, you know, of course, I thought I picked a bunch of winners on Wednesday. So hopefully this week.
You never think you're going to pick a bunch of losers on Wednesday.
No. Otherwise, I'd hope you wouldn't pick them.
Speaking of that carnage, Sia, the best way to, I think, to illustrate this is the 6 of 6 rate. So the percentage of lineups that got all six golfers through the cut line, cutsweats.com. It ranks every single tournament, essentially sub 1%. Of lineups got all 6 of 6 golfers through thanks to Abe Anser, Webb Simpson. I mean, it was carnage. Yeah, I think that's a good word.
Yeah, and it's almost like a sigh of relief when you see that on Cut Sweats, when you know you have like 5 out of 6 or maybe even 4 out of 6, and it's like, oh, thank God that bar graph is super low. Like, and you look to the left.
I'm not the only one.
Yeah. No, you look to the left, and it's like, oh, is that the 5% mark or the 10% mark that it's under? And this thing was as low as it could possibly be. So that was good, but I mean, it's certainly not a comforting feeling. Obviously, you know, we know this is going to happen in these events where, and I think you guys talked about this yesterday on the First Cut, Greg, you specifically, where it's like, man, these easier courses, it brings everybody into play. We talked about it last Monday too, of course. And it's one of those things where you expect carnage, but I think last week for some of those sort of top names, you didn't really expect it as much as we actually saw it. So it was very interesting. And this tournament is obviously the setup is going and the talent pool is going to be a lot different, but correct me if I'm wrong, boys, but this seems like another one where the scores are going to be pretty low.
Yeah, we're going to let's talk about the course. I'll share my screen here. This is my website, rickrungood.com. We have never seen the Summit Club on the PGA Tour. It's a Tom Fazio design. It opened 4 years ago. Greg, this is, I'm not going to call it a resort course because it's not technically a resort, but this is literally one of the most luxurious, high-scale residences that you can live in Las Vegas. It is definitely designed for a certain clientele. That clientele is not PGA Tour professionals. And when you start to look at this place, and I'll be out there on Tuesday, I'll walk it, I'll go hole by hole and see what's going on. But my early indication is it's very generous off the tee. There's a lot of width out there. There's a lot of places where you're not going to get into trouble. It's pure desert golf. I am interested to see how it translates onto our touring professionals.
It's always difficult when you haven't seen a golf course before to know exactly what kind of player is going to have success. That's our biggest challenge this week. We have no data, very similar to what we saw at Caves Valley and a couple of other courses through the year. Anytime we get a brand new venue. That being said, we have had some Tom Fazio venues, some courses that Fazio has worked on. I think of Quail Hollow. I think of Caves Valley, which we only have one rendition of. So looking at some of those Tom Fazio courses, I do think there's I do think there is a common thread a specific type of player that seems to do really well at the Fazio venues. And I think that could play into our hands this week. I do think it could be advantageous. So some of the stuff you mentioned, Rick, having width, and there is some length to the golf course, 7,400 yards, even though it's a par 72. There's a little bit of length there. And I know for me, I'm looking at drivers. What the common thread for Fazio courses is a lot of long hitters do really well. And then you sprinkle in some other guys who play well, like an Abe Anser or like a Webb Simpson, and they can accumulate some nice finishes. But for the most part, it's the really long hitters that do really well on most Fazio courses.
On Fazio designed courses dating back to 2010, of guys who have at least double digit rounds played, oh boy, best player gaining 2.11 strokes per round. He's the dead man, Hudson Swafford. Oh boy. Wait, it was Harry Hall last week. See, a dead man goes out, plays well. Is it Hudson Swafford week?
I mean, it's a no cut event, right?
That's true.
So, you know, have yourself a couple really good days and you're paying your price, which is, you know, it's certainly going to factor in. The one thing I want to ask you guys though is, yeah, it looks long, but you know, Rick, I guess you know as well as anyone, you know, the air is, it's not going to play this long, right, in Vegas. So, I mean, are we looking for, and obviously we're looking on the screen at sort of your course key stats, but are we looking for long hitters, or are the shorter hitters going to be in play to just kind of traverse some of the things that the longer hitters can normally traverse?
Yeah, it's interesting. So we're at about 2,300 feet of altitude here, Greg, which is a big difference over sea level, but not, you know, it's not too big over what 1500 feet or 1000 feet of altitude. I don't know what it is, couple yards, couple percentage of points, but it is interesting to me. And I felt the same way, you know, go look at Detroit Golf Club, go look at TPC Twin Cities, places where I think you can kind of bomb it without regard for accuracy. Do you have to be long, Greg? Is that the only way to get it done?
No, but it happens quite often. You'll see a leaderboard full of guys that are long hitters. There's still opportunity for shorter hitters to perform well. They just have it becomes very simple. What happens when the golf course is less penal is the par three you play after your tee shot gets more similar. And the thing that differentiates between the par three that Abraham Anser plays and the par three that Rory McIlroy plays is the length of it. And so even if you miss fairways, they're much more similar. The angle may change, the whole location may change based on where you hit that tee shot, but the biggest separator is the distance. So that's why I think you get a Cam Davis win at the Rocket Mortgage, a little bit of a longer hitter. And you'll see that from time to time. Is it going to happen every time? No, of course not. But it does give them a built-in advantage. And when we don't have data to back it up and we don't know exactly what's going to happen, all we know is who designed the golf course. And a lot of Fazio courses on the greens, they are big. They have some undulation, but their sections can be flat. So you don't have huge swinging putts if you're on the right level. So right, getting the ball on the right level becomes important, and that's easier to do with shorter clubs in. So my lean is still longer hitters. I do think it gives them an advantage. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot to go on. So this is maybe one little nugget that may turn out to be a tiny thread, but I do think it's something worth looking at. And I think it could be, if you're in between two players, it could be something that gives you a little bit of an edge.
Let me ask you this, and then we'll jump to the cheat sheet and we'll dive into this. I'm going to be out there tomorrow. What should I be looking for? I'm not a course architect expert, right? So as I'm walking this course, what should I be looking for? Should I be looking at those green complexes and seeing kind of how big those tiers are or where it rolls off? Should I be looking at width of fairway or length of rough? What things should I consider when I come back with my, you know, my intel?
I would imagine length of rough is negligible. One thing
I would imagine that as well.
This is a common thread on Tom Fazio courses is where the fairways are wide, but they tend to pinch. And so where are the players landing their ball? Are there players who can carry bunkers? Even though the rough isn't long, you do get some deep bunkers on Fazio courses, and those can become hazards. And the bunkers can separate players on length based on carry distance. So again, to use the same two players, Rory may be able to carry the corner of a dog leg and leave himself a flip wedge in, where Abraham Answer might have to hit a three wood out to the corner because he can't carry the bunkers. He's either got to shape it between them or he's got to lay back off the tee. So I'd be looking at some of those landing areas and where are they narrow? Are they pinched or is there within in the landing area for everybody? And that can also be a differentiator. And then secondly to that, how's the golf ball receiving the greens? Are you seeing a big first bounce? Are you seeing the greens be pretty receptive? Is there a big difference between a guy approaching the green with an 8-iron and a guy approaching the green with a wedge? And if you see that big difference, all it does is give a bigger advantage to the longer hitters. So those would be the two things, landing areas and firmness of greens, even though the firmness is going to change throughout the week. It's just it can be a good indicator on a Tuesday. Hey, they're really bouncy or they're pretty receptive. And again, it will change throughout the week, but that's something I'd be looking at.
All right. I'm on it. I will report back, let you know what I find. Let's go to the cheat sheet. And this is an absolutely stacked field. Six golfers see you above $10,000. It didn't take long. Dustin Johnson gets 5 points at the Ryder Cup and he's back atop the board as the most expensive golfer, 11,300. JT, 11-1. Colin Morikawa, 10-8. Xander Schauffele, 10-6. Jordan Spieth is 10-3. And Rory McIlroy rounds out the group at 10,100. Do you want to do the Colin Morikawa thing now, or do you want to save it until the end of this pricing tier?
Well, I was probably going to start with Colin Morikawa, so Perfect. Maybe we should do it now.
Colin Morikawa, as has been well documented and will be discussed ad nauseum, is constantly at the Summit Club, plays out of that when he's in town, a near daily basis, he is over there. Now, we have had different conversations about whether that is a good or bad thing when it comes to tournament time, but I imagine most are going to see it as a very, very good thing.
Yeah. And especially when you measure it against, you know, whatever metrics you think are important here. Like for me, for example, strokes gained par five, which I think is pretty important here, approach off the tee. Recent form is good. So, I mean, Colin Morikawa makes a lot of sense. I think Colin Morikawa and probably in this top tier, Justin Thomas, especially with his recent form, him kind of coming on. I think those two guys are really good plays. I think Xander's a really good play. There's not a lot of plays I don't like here, but I would probably be focused on Colin Morikawa the most, particularly because of how familiar he is here. But all the other stuff sort of matches and measures out too. So it's one of those things that's going to be hard to get away from him. When it comes to ownership, I'd be really curious to see who the top guys are in this range. I will say this, in already building a couple of lineups, it feels like it's soft pricing because of who was in the 6K and who was in the 7K, even the 8K range. So
yeah,
there shouldn't be a conversation that you're having with yourself like, oh man, I think DJ is, or Justin Thomas, I just think they're priced too high, because you're going to be able to fit in the team that you, especially in a no cut event, you're going to be able to fit in the team that you look at on Wednesday evening and you're like, yeah, this team is ready to roll. So I wouldn't worry about prohibitive pricing here.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm probably a bit partial to the pivot to the other Las Vegas resident, Xander Schauffele, who's just always in complete control. He's going to be very familiar with the setup and the conditions. He's great on bent grass. Greg, when you look at this 10K, we've got, let's see, two guys who have thrived in no-cut events. That's Justin Thomas, Xander Schauffele. You have the connections to the club with Colin Morikawa. You have Dustin Johnson, who we know when he's, like, whatever direction he's going in, good or bad, whatever direction he starts going in, it's kind of hard to stop him. So we might be in the midst of starting a run like that. And then Spieth and McIlroy, who I imagine will just be overlooked because everyone might opt for one of the top four.
The guy that jumps out to me, maybe it's because his picture on DraftKings hasn't been a red shirt. That might have something to do with it. But Rory McIlroy jumps off the page to me. I look at what he's done in other Tom Fazio venues. He played very well at the BMW Championship. He came in fourth there. He won the Wells Fargo. We know about his history there. Even the Olympics, he was in that playoff for the bronze. And that is another course that Tom Fazio had his hands on. So I because I'm looking at driving, and I think it's going to be a big advantage this week, I think Rory is a really solid play. That being said, there are a lot of other really solid plays in this. I think Rory just might be overlooked, and he's very worth putting on your team.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a little extra motivation from the Ryder Cup. Maybe Rory had a little look in the mirror after his emotional Ryder Cup disappointment and says, hey, I gotta step it up here. And this is where it starts. So I expect some good things out of Rory McIlroy, and I think he's worth taking a chance. Dustin Johnson, like you said, really hard to stop. A great driver of the ball, as we know, can take advantage of a place where there's not a lot of punitive nature going on.
The other thing, Greg, is I don't think people realize how good DJ's been with his putter. I mean, he has just been piling up weeks of gaining with the flat stick. By my quick count, like 9 of his last 11 measured events, he's gained, and he's gained 2 and 3 and 4. That is never discussed when it comes to Dustin Johnson. We talk about it with John Rahm. We obviously talk about it with Jordan Spieth. We never, ever really give DJ the credit he deserves with the putter.
And he is a really good putter. When we're watching DJ, when we're all watching Dustin Johnson, and we think that he is in great form, and we think Dustin Johnson is impossible to beat, his putting is great. It always is. And it usually is over long periods of time. When it goes south and he starts to play poorly, the putting has a tendency of stopping. But I think his ball striking is going to be really hard to contend with here. I love DJ's wedge play. I expect him to have a ton of wedge opportunities and really take advantage with the driver. And you combine those three areas, and there's a reason he's the top price player. So my favorite plays in this range are
rank
the top and the bottom.
Rank one. Give us 1, 2, and 3.
1, 2, and 3. I'd say, and I'm including price here.
Sure.
So I think my value plays would be Rory, DJ, and I think I'd have to go with Xander after that.
Okay.
I think Xander's a better putter than JT.
I was going to go Xander, DJ, and then I toss up. I would probably lean. I'd probably go with Morikawa. I'm not as high on that narrative, Sia, just because we've heard guys say, and this happened at Summerlin last week, those pins that they played last week, you never see on a daily basis at TPC Summerlin. Now, Colin Morikawa is also just very, 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 very good at golf, so it might not matter anything. So let's hear your three in this 10K range. We'll bop on down to the nines.
Yeah, and by the way, that narrative, I'm all about narratives, as you guys know, but that's not even really a big factor. If I'm looking at a pie chart, that might be like 15% of the reason that I like Colin Morikawa the best. And by the way, spoiler alert, in my top three, Colin Morikawa is number one. I think I have Xander 2 and Justin Thomas 3.
Fair enough. $9,000 range, larger than normal. We're seeing a pretty significant 9K range, Greg, because there's so many names. It starts with Sam Burns, Victor Hovland, Brooks Koepka, goes all the way down to Cam Smith, Abraham Anser, and Scottie Scheffler. Those last two, a couple of disappointing missed cuts last week. How do we start to assess this $9,000 range that also includes the guy who won, Sung Jae Im, last week?
I like Victor Hovland again. Hovland in the BMW Championship at Caves Valley played nicely, although it wasn't great. He played very solid. He came in 17th, and he did very well at the Wells Fargo, which is third. Again, going on the Tom Fazio style here, I'm putting too much emphasis on it, but I like guys who are comfortable on these kind of golf courses, and Victor Hovland clearly is. So I do really like him, and I like Burns. I like those top two guys to have a really solid week. The other guy who has kind of had some sneaky success on Fazio courses is Cam Smith. He did great at the BMW. He did well at the BMW, I guess, but it was really the Northern Trust where he was on fire. But he's done really well at these venues in the past. So I think Cam Smith could be a sneaky kind of a play here. And we haven't seen a lot of him, so I don't know exactly where his game is, but he has my interest for sure. I love the way he rolls it. And again, not a lot of trouble off the tee can be an advantage for a Cam Smith. He can really get it going with the iron play, and he makes a ton of birdies. Last year, I think he was second on tour in birdie average. So the guy can go low. He can make birdies, and this is the type of event he can really excel in.
Let me give you a couple nuggets here. First of all, Sam Burns is like the outside of his Sunday round at Summerlin, I mean, by far, like literally the hottest player on the planet. And he's doing it in a way, which is all tee to green. And he's a very good putter. Victor Hovland last week gained 5.5 strokes off the tee, basically another 5.5 on approach, by far the best ball striker in the field. See, he lost nearly nine strokes around the green. We know what Victor says about his short game. One, he sucks at chipping. But this was by far the worst around the green performance of his career by a mile. He could be bad. He doesn't have to be that bad. He can lose three or four. I like Victor Hovland here. I'll probably go back to him. This 9K range that you generally like more than most, you know, we've been seeing in the past couple of weeks and months, usually four or five names here. We're getting a much larger section. So is this still a range that you think is worthy of the designation?
Absolutely. And it's also, and I usually say this, it's a range where I think you can start your build if you really want to, but you don't have to. I'm just, to me, there's a lot of talent in this range, and it starts with Victor Hovland. That around the green stat is really kind of crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's been pretty bad for him. We saw a correction in his around the green game in the middle of last year, and then it obviously did. Regressed a bit. The putter hasn't been very good, but I mean, even if the around the green game remains kind of, you know, poor, but not as poor as the Shriners, the way he's ball striking it, if he finds a hot putter, like he's just going to win whatever tournament he's in. And I think he absolutely can win this one. So I like Victor Hovland quite a bit. As I sort of go down the board in the 9K range, I think Tony Finau is interesting, especially in a no-cut event where he can't break my heart. It's one of those things where Tony Finau can really get hot. I mean, if you look at his numbers, like we're looking at right now, they can be kind of erratic here and there. But then look at the Northern Trust, for example, where, boom, he's just like crushing it off the tee, crushing it on approach. We know he's capable of doing those things. And, oh, by the way, picking up four strokes with the putter. So I could see a pop with Tony Finau. I wonder what his ownership is going to be. I think it's actually going to be lower than it normally is when he's in the mid 9K range.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I'll give him credit. You know, he lost four strokes putting at the Tour Championship, but he has been much better with the flat stick recently here. So, see, I want to bounce this right back to you because this is a rare occasion where we get an event in the same town the following week. So when you start to assess maybe someone like Sung J.M., who obviously was playing well coming in to last week, wins the event, has to do the media obligations, but does not have to hop on a plane and go anywhere. Does that change your perception of the previous week's champion?
Not really, especially when it's Sung J.M. I mean, he's so even keel. I feel like almost like there's a little sense of like a Dustin Johnson with him where it's just kind of like, it's just another day out on the golf course. And so I don't really think it's going to affect him negatively or positively. He's not a guy that I'm necessarily focused on in this tournament. But then again, I wasn't focused on him last week either. And so that didn't go very well. The only other guy in this range that I'm pretty interested in is actually what the guy Greg said, which is Cameron Smith. You know, he doesn't really grade out tremendously well, especially if you're focused on off the tee. But usually it's those tournaments where Cam Smith just surprises everybody. And from an event history standpoint, again, I stress event history, he's been great. But more importantly, his game has been in good shape. And I think his approach game can get really hot, which could, and his putter can get hot too.
You guys missed the guy. It's Louis. Louis's the guy. So finishes T14. No one knew nor cared what Louis did last week. I've never seen a more under the radar. I don't think I was there for 4 days. I'm not sure I saw him hit a single shot. I certainly didn't see one on TV. Finishes T14, third in the field in strokes gained tee to green. Lost nearly two with the putter. This guy was the best putter on the planet Earth last year. I'm buying Louis for $9,300. That's fair, right?
Yeah, I love that.
Fair price. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely a fair price. The one thing on Louis to me, I just worry about him in these kind of events. A resort course with Louis to me, it doesn't jump off the page. And he's so good when it's tough. When the golf course is tough, he's one of the safest play major championships. He's as safe a play as you get. I don't know. I don't have the warm and fuzzies about Louis in these kind of events. But hey, sometimes numbers don't lie.
We shall see. You're right. I mean, he does. I mean, he posts unbelievable finishes. He really only plays. He doesn't play a lot of easy events or a lot of easy courses. He tends to save it for weeks.
I think there's a reason for that. It doesn't necessarily. He's not a guy that makes a ton of birdies. He's a guy that's very good at avoiding bogeys in general. So, but we'll see how it goes. He's never a bad play. He's a fantastic player and obviously hitting it quite well.
I want to move on to the AKs, but before we do, we got to talk Abraham Ancer and Scottie Scheffler, because they were probably two of the biggest disappointments from last week. Both missed the cut. Ancer was horrible. He was two over. Scottie Scheffler was one under. He tried to make a run on Friday to make the cut, but let's see. Ancer, again, these are all in two rounds. Ancer lost 6 strokes on approach, another shot and a half on the greens. Scottie lost 3 on approach, another 3 around the greens. Sia, is this a moment to forgive and forget, or are we avoiding these guys for this week as well?
I'm willing to forgive and forget Scottie Scheffler. I think his upside is a little bit better than Ancer's, especially at a birdie fest. So, and by the way, the metrics for Scottie Scheffler didn't look, they weren't as unimpressive or sort of dangerous to me as Ancer's were, especially that approach number. And losing 3 around the green for Scottie Scheffler, I'm not specifically worried about.
And I'll tell you, Sia, there are 2 defenses at Summerlin. One is the desert. If you're playing out of the desert, you're in trouble. The other one's around the greens. That's where you will see guys hemorrhage strokes a la Victor Hovland. So I agree with you. I'm not as concerned about someone losing 3 around the greens at Summerlin, but you're saying there's more red flags in Abraham Ancer here.
Correct. Yep.
Which, oh boy, ugly. Greg, are you willing to forgive Abe?
Yeah. Again, not my favorite, but I'm willing. And the reason for that is he's a fighter. And when he struggles, he bounces back quite nicely. He missed 3 cuts on tour last year. After the first one at the Sony Open, he came and tied 5th. After the one at the Genesis, he came and tied 18th in a WGC event. And after he missed the cut at the US Open, he came in 4th at the Travelers. So he's done well in the bounce back area. And so that being said, I'm not overly confident about it, about his game. I don't love what I saw last week, and I was so high on him last week that it was really disappointing. But I give him a little bit of extra credit because of his fight. And I don't think he's a guy who's going to get down on himself and say my game's in shambles and I need to work on all these areas of my game. He's going to keep on doing what he's doing. And this is a bad week, and he'll throw it behind him. And I wouldn't be surprised if he performed well.
The other, to Greg's point about the bounce back week, all of those that he pointed out were indeed the next week, not necessarily the next start, which is always good. It's a quick bounce back period. Okay, we're going to get down to the 8K and the 7K and the 6K, which the 8 and the 7s, that might be my favorite place. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're back. The $8,000 range starts with Harris English, Tommy Fleetwood, Webb Simpson, goes down to Paul Casey, Adam Scott, and Patrick Reed. So, Sia, there's kind of a lot to unravel here. I have similar questions about guys that miss cuts like Webb Simpson and Jason Kokrak. I have concerns like I had last week about Mr. Paul Casey and Patrick Reed. So we got to figure out what the heck's going on in this range.
This is a really tough range to handicap, in my opinion. There's two guys that sort of jump out to me. One is Harris English at 8,900. Yeah, he's coming off a miscut, so hopefully that keeps ownership down a little bit. But really what failed him was the putter more than anything. I think he lost 6 strokes putting, and we're about to see it. 5.96.
In two rounds. Impressive. That might be his worst ever. Hold on, let me figure that. 5.96, that is his worst two-round total in his career.
Yeah. And so it's one of those things where I mean, honestly, it wouldn't shock me at all if he gains 2 strokes putting it at the CJ. And we know he's a good ball striker. I mean, he didn't strike the ball particularly well last week, but he wasn't horrible by any stretch. And honestly, he's been hot. His recent form has been good. I expect the putter to regress the other way, and I expect the ball striking to be there. So I think he's sort of a sneaky play, not a super sexy play. Hopefully that means ownership is kind of low. Speaking of ownership kind of being low, and a guy who missed the cut last week, Jason Kokrak. Yes. He was another guy through two rounds. If you look at his numbers, his metrics, they weren't really that bad. He had one day he was a little shaky off the tee. He had one day where he was kind of bad with the putter. Outside of that, Jason Kokrak was pretty good. We know he's the type of guy, especially on a course like this, that can pile up the birdies, that can just really score, which is what you're going to want to do, especially in a no-cut event. Like we have to keep that in mind. We had a few weeks in a row where we had kind of like no-cut events, and then we went back to normal, and then we had the break. Like, this is a no-cut event. Guys like Jason Kokrak, guys like Scottie Scheffler, that you might not have a lot of made cut equity, that's not really going to be as significant here.
So I'm with you on Kokrak. I lump Webb Simpson into the mix here as well, which is guys that were both 4 under and missed the cut. You know, they're 4 under, they missed the cut. They both gained on approach, not in a huge way because they still missed the cut. Both of them putted poorly, but you would expect that the more they play, because I believe that was both their first starts of the season. Yes, they were. You would expect that to kind of figure itself out. Webb Simpson played the Fortinet. That's not true. But it was his first in a couple of weeks. So I like to forgive and forget on those guys. Greg, when you're starting to parse through this $8,000 range, what do you come out with?
You got to think Webb Simpson's going to take a turn for the better. So I agree with you there. Although I'm not, again, I don't love it. Jason Kokrak jumped off the page to me, but
he's technically the defending champion, defender.
And that could work against him. Because again, it's like Lonto Griffin when he was defending the Houston Open, the golf course moved and we spoke about this. That's why I bring it up. You have all the disadvantages of being the defending champion with extra media obligations and all that, all the stuff that goes along with that, but it's a different golf course. So you don't have that advantage. So it's all the bad, none of the good. But I love what Kokrak does with the driver. He's long as could be. My big concern with him is the putter. And in that second round, he lost a couple of strokes putting last week, even though he was 4 under. And it just makes me wonder, was what Jason Kokrak found last year with the putter real, or was it just... is it a 1 year flash in the pan year with the putter?
So I've thought about that because he had like a huge gain year over year. Now, and I thought about that for like the first half of the season. I'm like, this might not be real. Can you have an entire season of like just off the charts? Sia says no, that you cannot.
No. I mean, it doesn't mean he's going to continue to be like
a top 10 putter.
Right. But, what I'm concerned with, especially when it comes to putting, is the potential to be a good putter. And so when you give me that consistency last year for such a period of time, of course I'm worried about the putter, just like Greg, but I know he has the potential to putt well because he showed a pretty large sample size of doing that. So that's why guys like that really intrigue me, especially when their stock is a little low.
And I agree with that. That's one of the reasons why I like him. It's just that's my concern. So Kokrak is like a guy you circle multiple times. He jumps off the page. Mm-hmm. He's the perfect style, but I have that kind of sticking with me. The other guy I really am intrigued by in this range is Mark Leishman. And a portion of that is he's simply on fire. He has 2 top 5 finishes in the 2 events he's played this year. He shot a 63 and a 65 in his 2 Sunday rounds. Which I really like. He's striping the ball with his iron play right now, which can go a long way. 19th for the year so far, approaching the green, which is, it's hard to even judge, but he's second in strokes gained putting. And the other thing he's doing is hitting it. He's hitting it a long way. And through the first two events, he's averaging 317 off the tee. And then he's just piling up greens of regulation. So you combine a guy who's hit, who hits 75%, over 75% through those first two events in greens of regulation, and he's second in strokes gained putting. I mean, I know he's only played eight rounds, but he's averaging 6.5 birdies a round. So I really like that. And it definitely
he's averaging seven strokes gained a week with the putter. I think that's coming down at some point, but you're right. He's rolling the rock. He's gaining strokes on approach as well. It's, he's obviously, I'm not as bullish, but he's obviously feeling it. Like that's, right. It's not complete fool's gold where Nick Watney the other week gains 11.5 strokes putting, loses everywhere else. At least Leishman is gaining on approach, and he gained 5 at the Fortinet. That's a huge number.
Yeah. And he's a good putter. Historically, he is a guy that runs really hot with the putter. So it's not like a complete fluke where he just found something. When he plays well, he putts really well. So not necessarily the most consistent putter on the PGA Tour year over year, but he's a guy that's been quite good in the past, especially when it goes well. So I think in a no-cut event as well, it's a good time to take a flyer. Even if you feel like you're a little late, I still think there's a lot of value in Mark Leishman in this range.
Anybody else see ya? I'm like lukewarm on Adam Scott. I guess we'll wait and see on Patrick Reed. He was pretty bad last week at Summerlin. We're getting a glimpse of Lowry and Hatton for the first time since the Ryder Cup. I'm not 100% sure how to necessarily approach this range.
Well, Casey and Lowry are, I think, the ones that I'm interested the most in terms of like a second tier guy that I haven't decided whether I'm playing or not. Casey's game's been a little erratic, but we know he's pretty good on approach. I mean, wow, that speaks to me a little bit. It's been the putter, obviously, that's gotten in his way. But again, the putter's been bad, but he at least has flashed some potential with it. I mean, there's obviously a couple nice ones there, but then there's a couple where he's just a zero putter, essentially. I mean, off the tee on approach, I can't really argue with that. And at his price, I mean, we saw Casey play really well kind of towards the beginning to the middle of last season. And it wouldn't shock me if he picks up right where he left off from there.
Okay. I don't know. I will be doing some soul searching for the bottom of this $8,000 range, but let's jump on down to the $7,000 range. Starts with Justin Rose, Kevin Na, Max Homa, goes down to Russell Henley, Cameron Tringale, Jason Day, Sergio Garcia, we're seeing for the first time since the Sanderson Farms. Siwoo Kim, who we see every single week. Max Homa back in the field for the first time since his victory at the Fortinet. Greg, when you start to dive into this range, what do you find?
I'm interested in Joaquin Niemann and Sergio Garcia primarily. Okay. Part of the reason is they're very, very good drivers of the golf ball. And they're long. Sergio showed us at the Ryder Cup, he still has plenty of power in the bank. Now, I'm not sure how that's going to translate this week. So I would say Joaquin is probably my favorite in this range, and he can be risky. But I
was happy to see him do this, gain strokes putting last week. That was a big thing that we were looking for. I think we talked about it last week. He lost the putter at the end of 2020 or the end of the 2021 season, which was uncharacteristic. And I was worried. It was like the Shriners was going to be, for me, a defining moment. Did he fix it in the month that he had off? Seemingly he did. I'm fairly encouraged by what I saw from Joaquin.
And he is a good putter. Typically, he was 49th for the year, but as you said, it did really start to slip at the end. He lost a lot of spots in that ranking. But he's a great ball striker, very good driver of the ball, creative with the driving, and he's a really good iron player as well. Last year on tour, he was 49th approaching the green, and so far through four rounds, he's 97th, but gaining on the year so far approaching the green. So Joaquin Niemann really has my interest. And on the Sergio Garcia front, a pair of 70s at the Sanderson Farms, I'm not sure how concerned I am about that. But I think there's a lot to like about a Sergio Garcia. He played really well at Caves Valley at the BMW Championship, where he was tied sixth. So I maybe again, and Joaquin played pretty well there as well. I think he was top 30 there too. And Joaquin also played nicely at the Wells Fargo, which if you compare those golf courses, then I think they could be really, really solid ads.
Sergio Garcia gained strokes at the Sanderson Farms and missed the cut. Hard to do. It's hard to do because you have to finish like, you have to finish 60, basically like 66th to like 71st. It's a very small window. You can do that.
Right. Man, he's in good form. He's a really good ball striker, and you're hoping he can get it going with the putter because you know he can contend. You know he hits it well enough to contend.
Statistical anomaly that week. Yeah. Okay, see, I've circled. Believe it or not, I have 1, 2, 3. I have 4 names circled here. One of them is not Harold Varner III, who I guess we need to keep an eye on. He is as we speak. Still in this field. Congratulations to Harold and his wife. HV4 has arrived. So congrats. I don't know if he's planning on playing. So we'll keep an eye on HV3 over the next couple of days. But this 7K range, Sia, you're speaking to it. What is it saying?
Okay, so I have 4 guys, Rick, and it sounds like you have 4 guys as well.
I do.
I'm willing to bet I have 2 of your 4.
Okay, tell me who they are. Let's go one by one.
Aaron Wise.
For sure is one, yes.
Boom. Maverick McNealy.
Not one for me.
What? Alex Noren.
Okay, that's 2. That's one of
mine. Nice. I thought that one was the obscure one. And then Cameron Tringale.
No, you got it right. 2 was the line.
204. Well, I mean, Aaron Wise, I mean, he's been really good. He's been solid off the tee. He's been solid on approach. And the putter has been really good, which is awesome, right?
Yeah, so yeah. Here's the thing. He's top 25 in tee to green last season, which is an unbelievable stat to be top 25 in strokes gained tee to green. That's like, you're so close. He was 174th in putting. He's been much better. He's gained in 3 of his 5. I told this anecdote 100 times last week. I swear to you, Aaron Wise spent 20 hours on the putting surface last. Every time I was at Summerlin, he was putting. It was unbelievable. Good for him.
I love it. I love it.
Love hearing that.
So, yeah, I like Wise. We got to look at his outright odds because, hey, that's fun.
I know.
It's probably going to be pretty long. Matt McNealy, he is a member here, right, Rick?
Yes. He's a Vegas guy. I believe he is a member here, yes.
So aside from that narrative, which could be a pro or a con, he's in the metrics I looked at for this tournament, he's top 25 in almost every single one. And of course, that's going to be like approach off the tee, around the green, putting, but then some other stuff like stroke gain, par 5, you know, birdie or better, those kinds of things. So he's near or within the top 25 in almost every one of those. And, you know, he's good off the tee. If we want to look at that, he's 6th in this field, last 36 rounds off the tee. And I do like that he's familiar with the course. So Matt McNealy for sure. And then Noren, I mean, he's just one of those guys where the metrics don't jump out at you. It's almost like the Cam Smith thing, like a poor man's Cam Smith, like where the metrics don't always jump out at you, but they always, every third tournament, just find themselves near the top, just making it with the putter, which Alex Noren is prone to doing, and the short game. I like him. And then Cameron Tringale, I just think with Cameron, it's a price thing. At 7,000, it seems a little too cheap for his caliber of player. Believe it or not, for those of you that don't think he's the guy that can score in par fives, he's pretty high up there. We know he can get hot with the putter. Off the tee is slight, maybe more than a slight weakness for him. But outside of that, he's great. And so I'm willing to forgive that, especially at 7,000.
The thing about Noren is most people will only look and see, like they'll click the PGA logs or whatever, and it'll say T4 at the Northern Trust, T9 at the BMW Championship, which are both great. They might not know he also, the week before those, had a T16 at the Olympics. Then he played twice on the European Tour, T27 at the BMW PGA Championship, which is a premier event on that circuit. And then just, I guess it would have been 2 weeks ago, T12 at the Alfred Dunhill. He is playing a lot of really good golf all over the globe at the moment. So I too like Alex Noren. The other two that you missed or that we did not align on, one was Taylor Gooch, who just continues to be just a ball striker, right? I mean, just flushes it. He is generally inaccurate off the tee, but longer than average. I don't mind that this week. And then the other guy was Russell Henley, who I believe led the field in strokes gained approach last week. He did, which is just like, it's vintage Russell Henley. Put yourself in a lot of situations. He's got a high enough floor. Those are the 4 that I had in that range.
I really like the Gooch play. He's been playing some great golf.
11th and 4th in his last two starts. He finished 5th at this event. I understand it is a different golf course, but it is a similar caliber of field, a similar setup, 78 golfers, no cut. Gooch's, he's not having a coming out party. He's like on the verge of having a coming out party. I don't want to say he's even star adjacent. He's like adjacent to becoming a star.
Rick, last year, it's funny you mentioned that. Last year, around the January timeframe, I believe it was, I did something about picking guys that were ready for a coming out party, and he was my top guy. There were so many metrics, there were so many areas of his game that were really trending in the right direction, and he performed well at events like the CJ Cup, some big events in the fall. So I really thought his coming out party was going to happen last year. It just kind of was average. It didn't happen. And maybe I'm a year early on him, and it's happening right now. So I totally agree with you. I'm a huge fan, and I think he's a very safe play week over week, a very safe play. So I love it.
And he won't miss the cut this week. So see ya, good.
Let me just, that's true. let me just point out that Aaron Wise and Alex Noren are both 60-1 to win the tournament, 45-1 to be your first round leaders. They share similar numbers here. I'm not saying that's a great play. 60-1 is kind of fun, but I also noticed Hovland's 30-1. I think that actually is a good number. So, okay, I'm done with the betting thing.
I love Victor so much. He's so good. Somebody in the chat said he was focusing too much on poker rooms. He's a big fish in the 2-5 game at Red Rock. Stick to golf. I know he can afford to lose money at the poker game, but he's a big fish over there.
Wait, who's this?
Victor Hovland.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He loves poker.
That's very interesting.
Loves poker.
I got to fly out to these games.
He's such a good guy. I love that kid. $6,000 range. Oof. Interesting names. I mean, this is a stacked field. It's very interesting. Ian Poulter, Keegan Bradley at the top, goes all the way down to, we already talked about one of these min-priced guys, Hudson Swafford. Also, there's the injection of, I believe, the Korean Tour gets 5 or 6 exemptions. I think the Japanese Tour might get 3. The other name that most people would recognize at the min price would be Lucas Glover. So, Greg, this is where, to Sia's point, you don't have to go this low because it's pretty soft, but like you can make some pretty good teams here.
Absolutely. And these are definitely classic major championship like teams where on Wednesday you feel like you got a winner because you can't believe the guy you got in the 6K range and his name. I got Lucas Glover down here. So you'll feel great about that. That being said, my two favorite plays in this range, one is Cam Davis, who played a really nice round last week, I believe, yes, on Sunday, 66 on Sunday, yeah, for a T27 finish. And in a way, this reminds me of a Detroit Golf Club kind of scenario where you can hit it really far. You don't have to be that accurate. And he's a big-time birdie maker. He was 22nd last year on the PGA Tour in birdies made. He putts nicely.
Look at his bent numbers.
Yeah,
he's like
great,
he's like Denny McCarthy on bent.
So I think he's... I mean, I'd look at his odds too. See ya if you're interested.
Oh, fair enough.
If that's what you're into. I think Cam Davis is a really smart play, and he's at 6,400. I mean, you could almost start there, and I think he's trending in the right direction. So I really like that. And if you want to go a little lower, a little deeper into the doldrums, I might go with a guy like Keith Mitchell. Keith Mitchell is, you'll see, he's coming off of 2 missed cuts at the Shriners. He shot 70-68 and was very near making the cut. But the thing I really like about him, and again, I'm sticking to my guns here with the Tom Fazio stuff. Maybe it's oversold. We'll see. I think it's going to play out. And I look at a guy T3 at the Wells Fargo Championship, and he played okay at the BMW, but he plays really well at Quail. And if there's any comparison, any situation where those two things may align, Keith Mitchell at 6,200 in a no-cut event might be a nice avenue.
Harry Higgs is kind of interesting. I followed Harry for a while because he was playing with Doc Redman and Anirban Lahiri. I followed that group for a while. Looked pretty much in control of his game. I'd be interested to roll back at that number. He's 6,100, I think. Sia, how in the world was Harry Hall not in the optimal lineup last week?
That's a great question.
Here was the optimal. Sungjae at 92, Wolf at 82, Leishman at 76, and then three guys in the $6,000 range. Shank at 68, Hadwin, Greg at 68, and Rory Sabatini, nice coaching, at 6,500. The optimal lineup scored 756 points and cost 45,100. So if you're a big fan of leaving $4,900 on the table, you probably had yourself a pretty good week.
Wow. That's impressive.
But Harry Hall, min price.
You leave that much on the table, Rick? Will you go back?
Sometimes. So when I run lineups like that, I'll just cap it at like 47,000. And sometimes they show up in their 45,100, right? Depending on whatever metric I'm optimizing on. But generally, 47 or 48,000, I'll cap it a lot of times.
Yeah.
And can I just say, for just patting first cut on the back here, it was just last Monday where we actually dropped some knowledge about Harry Hall on the course that he was about to play, where he top 10. And then the week before, we dropped some knowledge about Sahith Theegala, who also top 10. These guys were like near the min price at the time. So it pays to watch the first cut Monday.
It's just also like golf is so deep. The fact that someone has to be $6,200. Someone has to be $6,000. They're all very, very good at golf. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a cool way to think of it because, like, you're right. Somebody has to get slotted into that, especially when the talent is pretty deep like it is here. Somebody has to take that number, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a bad golfer.
Anybody else here, Sia, in the $6,000 range?
So I like Keegan. I mean, the ball striking hasn't really been there. The putter certainly hasn't been there lately, but it's one of those things where I know Keegan can do it. And it's, And at 6,900, it just seems to me that like I'm willing to take a chance on a guy like that.
I raised my eyebrows at Keegan too. It's interesting. Maybe it's just the name, but I see where you're going, Sia.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it again. You know, if you look at the summer, last summer, I mean, we're seeing the ball striking that we're used to seeing with a guy like Keegan Bradley. We're seeing a decent putter. And I think he can find that again. And when you're 6,900, listen, if he was 8,200, I wouldn't consider it. But when you're 6,900, it allows me to do a lot of different things. So I like him. I like Kevin Streelman a lot for some reason. The metrics are okay across the board. He just seems to me like a guy that is going to strike the ball well. He's not going to be terrible on the par fives, even though he's a shorter hitter. And he seems to me like a guy that's just not going to have any ownership. And so he's another guy that I kind of want to lean on.
Yeah, you know, he always has a pretty decent floor. You know what I mean? It's just like he's rarely going to kill you, which I think can be valuable, especially as you're in this price range and, just finishing like inside the top 30 is probably worth it here.
See, you love Streelman. Is that why? Because his floor is so high? You bring him up a lot. And,
you know,
is that why?
I think it's sort of a cheat code that doesn't necessarily work for me, where I try to pick guys when I'm not sure or when the price is right. If you're a good ball striker and I think you're going to keep it in the fairway and set yourself up for that second shot well, like a Keegan Bradley normally does, for example, or a Charlie Hoffman, some of these guys, even Sergio, I like to sort of try to lean on some of those guys because I know that 30% of the work is done. And it's just, I got to have them, close the deal. It's like, you do a killer crossover on somebody, but you airball the layup. It's like, that's great. That looked really good on film, but you didn't finish. Like,
that's the basketball equivalent of Hideki stuffing it to 5 feet and missing the putt.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. That's so good. So anyway, the only other guy I'll say in the 6K range that I think will be pretty popular is Johnny Vegas, especially if you're leaning on the off the tee metrics. He's going to grade out amazingly. His recent form has been pretty good. Immediate recent form hasn't been quite as good, but we know he has upside, especially in a no-cut event. By the way, Cam Davis is 130-1, but if you don't think he can do it for four rounds, first round leader, he's 70-1.
Dang. Looks like I'll be spending some Cam Davis money this week, which is not unusual. Greg, put a bow on this. Anybody else in the $6,000 range that we should consider for our DFS lineups for this week's CJ Cup?
Man, I always got another guy near min that jumps out to me every time. I can't quite figure him out, but Sebastian Munoz at 6,100. I just feel like he should be a little bit higher. And he's probably not for good reason, but he jumps out to me. I think he's a player who can really pop. And again, not my favorite, not in my top two in the 6K range, but a guy that could go well. The one thing is, he is kind of a popular name. He has missed three cuts in a row so far. But it, with his talent level, I imagine it's going to turn around at some point. He can't miss the cut this week. So maybe maybe he's another guy to throw in there.
Maybe that's all he needs. Just unlock his brain from not worrying about missing the cut this week. Okay. I think that'll do it. DFS preview. I will be out there with my notes from Greg on what to look for. So I'm very excited to get out there and see what this place is all about. I imagine it's going to be awesome. So we shall see. And I'll report back. That's how this will work. Follow Sia on Twitter at Sia Najad. Follow Greg at The Real GFD. Producer Jacob does all the hard work behind the scenes. Thank you very much. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
The time has come for drag queens to save the world. Drag queens
save the world. RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on Paramount Plus, and for the first time ever,
I want you to use your talent for good, for a change.
Eight iconic queens are competing for the charity of their choice.
This is how you do drag.
Who will slay it forward, win cash for their favorite cause, and a coveted spot in the Drag Race Hall of Fame? RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, new season now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.